Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Money Talking from WNYC. Good morning, I'm Charlie Herman. Well, it's been a real scorcher this week here in New York. Temperatures have been in the 90s, often feeling like they're in the low hundreds. And whenever the thermometer goes way up, you start hearing people talk about things like climate change and beginning to wonder if there's anything that can be done to stop it. Well, the president is proposing to using executive powers to cut greenhouse gas emissions by nearly a fifth by 2020. Joining me are Rana Fruhar with Time Magazine and Joe Nocera with The New York Times. And Joe, some of the president's proposals include things like limiting CO2 emissions from power plants or pushing the development of cleaner fuels like wind and solar. How's the business community reacting?
They're in favor of trying to do something about climate change. They think it's good for their employees. They think it's good business. The real nut of it has to do with coal. You know, so how do you reduce emissions? How do you reduce emissions in power plants? You get rid of coal-fired power plants. That's where the big problem is. And you replace it with natural gas.
But if you do that, that could lead to a lot of jobs loss. I mean, there's a big industry that relies on coal.
Absolutely, 100%. And that's why on Thursday, when Gina McCarthy, the new EPA administrator, was voted on by the Senate and approved, one of the people who voted against her was the hero of gun control, Joe Manchin. Why? He's a senator from West Virginia. That's his bread and butter. Mm.
He doesn't want those jobs cut.
Mm. Right.
But, Rana, if we worry about the impact of imposing changes to try and prevent climate change, are there also economic consequences if we don't do anything?
Well, sure. I mean, there are any number of studies that look at the way in which natural catastrophes that may be related to global warming are playing out, rising energy costs. By some measures, there's a over $1 trillion a year cost to climate change. The problem is that companies are run by the quarter, and climate change is a 20, 30, 50-year problem. So it's really, really difficult to get people to focus on it. Joe's right. Some of the smartest companies and the biggest companies where the economies of scale really add up are already on this. You look at firms like Walmart, you know, they're always looking for ways to reduce packaging, cut energy costs. It really matters to firms like that. I think that what the president can do is create some behavioral nudges that allow people to get the low-hanging fruit more. There was a McKinsey study a few years ago that found that we could reduce emissions by up to 50% just by doing things like turning out the lights and retrofitting buildings. I mean, we're not talking about trying to come up with crazy new cutting-edge technology necessarily.
But if the companies then are actually taking some of these steps to try and cut back on emissions or be more efficient, do we really need the government to come in and sort of start passing these types of laws that will really affect industry, affect jobs? I mean, is that the right way to go?
Well, to a certain extent, the market is taking care of this. Emissions are down in the United States without much really in the way of impetus from the federal government. As much as the government has tried to push solar, it's still such a tiny, tiny percentage. Ditto wind. So this transfer from coal to natural gas is kind of happening on its own.
In this particular moment with the president talking about these ideas that he has to cut greenhouse gas emissions, are they going to be enough to really make a dent?
I think the president is actually on the right idea. He can't do anything big like carbon tax because it has to go through Congress. And carbon tax is the single best way to reduce emissions. A lot of it's on the margins. But the truth of the matter is the reason so many Republicans don't like the EPA is because it does have the power to do a lot simply through regulation.
And from a competitive point of view, Rana, does it put us at a competitive disadvantage to places like China if we're cutting and they're not?
Well, it's a great question. I mean, coal-fired power plants in China have been growing, although recently the government, which actually views the environment as one of the biggest sort of mid to long-term challenges to the government there, or excuse me, to the two economic growth there, has begun really putting some rules into effect. They're trying to clean up the state-owned industries. They're trying to retrofit coal-fired power plants. And as is the case here, that has the added benefit of creating jobs. I mean, these are very labor-intensive things, retrofitting buildings and power plants.
Well, in a more immediate story, yesterday, Detroit filed for bankruptcy. Joe, explain the significance of this.
Well, you know, the obvious thing is Detroit is broke and has been broke for a while. But what's happened there is that the mayor has been pushed aside. The government, the governor has imposed an economic manager on the city. He has been trying to renegotiate contracts with the union so they have enough money to pay their bills. Those negotiations broke down. What does bankruptcy ultimately give a company, or in this case, a city, the right to do? It gives them the right to tear up contracts and impose their own terms. without any negotiation.
Mm-hmm. Rhonda, do you think we'll see this in other cities?
I do. I mean, you know, the famous banking analyst Meredith Whitney has been predicting for some time now that anywhere between 50 and 100 cities are going to go bust in the next year or so. And, you know, I think it speaks to the fact that the country is very bifurcated economically depending on what city you live in. Number of cities are booming, but plenty are going bust.
I seriously doubt that 50 to 100 municipalities will file for bankruptcy. But I think what you'll see instead is that, you know, cities, counties, states, all over the United States have pension obligations that ultimately they will not be able to pay.
Well, let's make some other predictions. Rana, what stories are you watching?
So I've been watching the financial industry. A lot of banks have reported earnings this week. Many of them are making record profits, but they're making them because of trading, not lending. At the same time—
Meaning they're not making a loan for a home or a business?
That's right, or a small business. They're making it because they're trading. This is where the profits are. At the same time, lending to, say, small businesses, which create the majority of new jobs in this country, is as tight as it's ever been. So you've still got this real disconnect between finance and the real economy. And it's no wonder that you've got folks calling for Glass-Steagall, which would separate commercial banks and investment banks.
And there's no wonder why the banking industry is opposed to that, like it's opposed to nothing else in the world.
They want to be able to continue trading. They want to make money.
Trading is where the action is.
Well, Joe, what are you paying attention to?
Well, last week, I was paying attention to the fabulous Fab trial. Fabrice Touré, the Goldman Sachs executive who's on trial for
His involvement in packaging and these mortgages securities.
Right. So this week, I'm still focused on that trial, but I'm making a prediction. After watching 1 week of the trial, I'm ready to say right here, right now, Fab gets off.
Because the case is falling apart, not as strong?
The case is totally falling apart. The government's star witness was on the stand this week, and all he did was cut the legs out from under the government. That he just said, oh, no, everybody knew what was going on. There was no misdirection here. And the government said, well, what about what you said in your deposition? And his response was, well, I felt under pressure from the SEC back then.
Well, we'll be watching those stories and all the week's financial news at WNYC.org/business. You can take this program with you as a podcast, available on iTunes. Rana Fruhar with Time Magazine, Jonah Serra with The New York Times. Thanks for joining.
Thank you.
I'm Charlie Herman. This is Money Talking from WNYC.